You're listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. On this week's film review, we have the latest superhero flick, a high-speed South Korean zombie attack, and a heartwarming British road trip. And talking me through all three is film critic Anna Smith. Anna, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Good to have you with us, as ever. Let's begin with the latest to come from comic book franchise Marvel. It's Doctor Strange, which sees Benedict Cumberbatch take the title role, who, after being injured in a car accident, obtains time-bending powers from a mysterious character called the Ancient One, who's played by Tilda Swinton. We'll hear a clip in a minute, Anna, but just to get the ball rolling, the prevailing view, maybe we shouldn't be worried about that, but it seems to be this is one of the better from this stable. Do you go along with that?
I do in general. I'm not a massive fan of the Avengers movies and all that. I mean, they're obviously hugely popular and they have a massive fan base. But I found this one more interesting, a little bit more bookish. I mean, it's about a character, one character in the main rather than 10. It's an origin story, so that's generally the way. But Benedict Cumberbatch is pretty good as Doctor Strange and brings a lot of that kind of Sherlock arrogance to the role, which is absolutely spot on for it. And it's also more about the power of the mind than it is about people being each other up, which I found far more involving.
So maybe a bit more thoughtful. And I guess, look, Cumberbatch, Tilda Swinton, I mentioned again already, like some proper acting heft. Now, that hasn't always worked in the past. There's been some real turkeys with the, even when the big guns have been rolled out. But I guess that helps as well, particularly if you're trying to be a little more thoughtful and maybe bring a little more complexity to the performances.
Definitely. Tilda Swinton in particular makes the most of monologues that could be a bit baffling and boring in other hands. I mean, you've also got Chiwetel Ejiofor, who's great. But even some of the best actors in this do struggle a bit with very, very long monologues, explanatory kind of stuff. And then someone comes in with a quip just to wake the audience up. So it's fairly superhero standard on that level. But Tilda elevates it for sure.
Well, let's have a bit of a listen. Here's a clip from Doctor Strange.
Through the mystic arts, we harness energy and shape reality. We travel great distances in an instant.
How do I get from here to there?
How did you become a doctor?
Study and practice, years of it.
There's a strength to him.
But is he ready?
Doctor Strange. Interesting, and to pick up on what you said about some of those dialogue moments, it's written and directed by Scott Derrickson, whose sort of filmic history is mainly in the sort of horror franchise, where that sort of quick explainer, bit of a quip, bit of darkness is kind of par for the course. Does he bring, I mean, can you tell this is the helmed by somebody whose background is in that genre?
I wouldn't have said it's that obvious. I mean, these Marvel films have a way of sort of levelling out and being fairly generic. I mean, the horror aspect is interesting. Obviously, he made Sinister and Sinister 2, and it certainly has a darker aspect than some of the other films. But I would say that kind of dialogue is fairly standard for the Marvel genre, to be honest.
Now, what about the sort of the setting and the wider questions around the cast? Because much of the film is set in Asia, as I understand it, and yet there aren't that many sort of Asian characters. And again, that's been criticised in some quarters. And of course, this taps into a broader point about how representative Hollywood is, particularly when it's pitching at markets like maybe the Far East. I don't know, we shouldn't be watching films through that prism, but was it hard to avoid? I don't know. What was your experience?
I think for those familiar with the comic books, they would certainly spot inconsistency straight away, or certainly things that have been strategically changed. Otherwise, coming to it straight, you just say, well, this is fairly ethnically diverse. But you might question why very few main characters in Nepal actually seem to be from Nepal, even though they are quite diverse. Originally in the book, it's set in Tibet, the comic books, but then for probably reasons of appealing to the Chinese market, that they've changed that. But Tilda Swinton at least is a kind of no explicit gender. I think some people are interpreting it that way. So that's kind of interesting and a bit progressive.
So, a partial, I don't know, a score
draw. It's a partial PC tick, but there are some problems, yeah.
But you can judge for yourself. Doctor Strange hits cinemas in many territories, including the United Kingdom. This week, it's on American screens on the 4th of November. And let's move on to South Korea, indeed, for our second film today. Speaking of Asia, shoehorn that in there. Train to Busan is the second picture. Thriller following a father and daughter who are trapped on a speeding train as a zombie attack commences. So zombie attack and speeding train, I like it, with nowhere to go until the train terminates, which could be metaphorical, who knows. They have to work together to stay alive. Let's kick this one off by hearing a little bit of it. Now, the nuances of that dialogue, and I will admit, are lost on me, but I heard portentous music and screaming. So yes, we're squarely in zombie territory. And it's interesting, Sang-ho Yeon, the director, this is his second zombie film of the year. Is that, I believe that's right. Is this a person with a zombie obsession?
Well, the world seems to be obsessed with zombies, don't they? And I have said, as a film critic, I started to get a bit sick of it. But this is a good zombie film. And it's also more about the humans than it is the zombies, which I find far more interesting. It's about the dynamic between the passengers on the train and how people respond to a crisis. So in a way, it's classic disaster movie stuff. You know, how, you know, do people become selfish and look out for themselves? Do they try to help each other? You've got heroism. You've got quite the opposite. There are a number of tropes, and some of them err on the obvious side, but it really works. It just grips. It's formulaic, but I was absolutely gripped throughout.
Sometimes these things are formulaic because the formulas do indeed work. And what about, you sort of alluded to it already there, this idea that maybe it's a bit different. You know, the way that the characters get out of strife is to look out for each other a bit. You know, maybe kindness is the answer instead of being kick-ass, as it often needs to be. Does that idea work, though, do you think?
That's very much the message, and I thought it was quite refreshing because horror movies particularly can be very, very dark and gloomy and bleak sometimes, and although there are some quite unpleasant moments in this, naturally, because there are, you know, zombies on a train eating people, but, you know, I actually did find it quite a positive, if fairly obvious, message, but it has a heart, this film.
That's good. Yeah. And let's hope, yeah, again, I don't know, literally or metaphorically, if you're talking about zombies tucking into people, whether they're having a heart is a good idea, but let's leave that. Where does this stand then? How does it fit into the canon? Because you mentioned that everyone loves zombies, and we've been from, you know, historical pieces in the sort of Jane Austen era to stuff in, you know, Crouch Hen around the corner from here. Where does this one then fit in? It's asking maybe some different questions, but does it sit, I don't know, happily in its family stable of zombie flicks?
Well, culturally, it's obviously quite different because we haven't seen one from South Korea before. But at the same time, I'd say it has the most in common maybe with World War Z, the American one, which I thought was actually quite effective, even though it sort of split people a bit, that one. It's certainly visually very inventive, as World War Z was. And there's some fantastic set pieces where all these zombies, they must have got mainly extras who were dancers, I think, because they've got these twisted limbs and they're sort of toppling over each other. So it's quite visually splendid. And so I would say World War Z, Not up there with Shaun of the Dead, but certainly better than Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
So solid effort, and a first live action film from Sang-ho Yeon. What, do you think you can score that then as a pretty confident debut? Should we expect to see more?
Yeah, I think Hollywood's going to tap this guy up.
Excellent. That's Train to Busan, which premiered at the Cannes Film Festival this year. It's out in the UK today, I think, and it hits South America next month, depending where in the world you're listening and will be watching. Let's alight from the zombie-ridden train. What a relief. And jump into a car. Well, at least you can get fewer zombies in a car, I suppose. We're taking a road trip around the UK in Burn, Burn, Burn. In the car, two female friends, Alex and Seth, who are on a journey to scatter the ashes of their late friend, Dan. Let's take a listen.
Let's scatter Dan.
Where possible, do a U-turn.
This trip, it's not just about me.
To Dan.
To Dan.
To Dan.
Have time to just work out some stuff.
Make the most of every tiny little second you breathe.
So that's a little clip of Burn, Burn, Burn. And tell us what's the kind of story here? I've given a very, very potted summary. How does the story kind of develop from there?
So it's two friends played by Laura Carmichael from Downton Abbey and Chloe Peary. And they find out that their friend Dan has bequeathed his ashes to them. And he wants them to take him on a road trip, on the ashes rather, from London up to Scotland, stopping in various points along the way, which was significant to him in his childhood. And each time they open the laptop, they play a little video from him. He tells them a story about why. But he's got a little bit of an agenda. He wants the two friends to actually confront each other and to confront some truths that they haven't really been honest with each other about. And they meet a series of characters along the way, as people do. But these are rather marvellously played by a sort of roll call of British greats, including Julian Reintart and Alice Lowe. There's a lot of quite dark comedy here, inspired by the likes of Green Wing, Smack the Pony, Sightseers, all of whose actors are in this film. So it's great fun, actually.
Big names there. And I guess in a similar way as showcasing some kind of great British acting talents, it kind of showcases Great Britain to a degree. I mean, does it ever lapse into feeling a bit like a sort of tourist board promotional piece? Or is that actually a kind of a happy byproduct of like a pretty strong narrative that we get to marvel at some of the beauties of our isles?
I think it's dark and cynical enough to not be that, even though there is some lovely landscapes to be seen. There's also grimy clubs and, you know, sort of dark and nasty moments. But ultimately, it's got a happy heart and it's very moving. It's probably one of those cliches, you know, I laughed, I cried, but probably one of the most balanced, poignant and funny films I've seen for a while, in that it was outright hilarious in points. And then at the end, it's very hard not to be sort of welling up.
Now, to get that sort of reaction, you generally need a pretty canny, a pretty canny and sage head in the director's chair. But again, and this was another feature, actually, for Chania Button. Tell us a little bit about, what you've already suggested is a pretty strong debut.
Yes, very strong debut, Chania Button. I think she's definitely a director to watch. And here she's also working with the writer Charlie Cavell, who is one of her close friends, and I think perhaps their friendship has had some influence on this film. It feels so real. It's one of the rare films where you actually think, okay, I actually talk like that. My friends and I talk like that. You don't see that on the big screen very often, so I'll be very interested to see what both of them do next.
And speaking of how to follow up, of course, it is interesting, you already mentioned, is Laura Carmichael is best known for Downton Abbey, of course. What does this tell us about where she could go from here?
Well, that she's versatile. Fantastic. You know, I mean, she doesn't just do periods dramas, and she's very funny. So, yeah, I think very promising stuff from her to come in the future as well.
Now, we shouldn't sort of reduce this just down to road trip movie, but it is interesting. We maybe even talked on this show, actually, fairly recently about American Honey, which has sort of garnered a lot of press, of course, and that's very much the kind of road trip staple. They're quite different films, obviously, and from the way you describe it. But I don't know, why don't we say, look, if our listeners are having to choose the road trip movie to go and see, which one should they pick?
Ooh, well, if you've got a lot of time on your hands, American Honey's very good. But if you want something a bit quicker and funnier, go for this one, Burn, Burn, Burn.
Lovely stuff. Burn, Burn, Burn is out today in the UK, also in Norway. I don't know, throw that in there in case you're listening in Oslo. That does bring us, though, to the end of today's show. Thanks, Anna Smith, for being with us, as always. This is the Monocle Arts Review. I'm Tom Edwards. The show is produced by Holly Fisher. Do join us again at the same time on Monday. We'll be talking South American art. But for now, it's goodbye from me. Thank you for listening.